The Dodgers are slowing down Shohei Ohtani's pitching rehab. Uh-oh. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, March 7th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. You can get every episode of the first of the podcast. First Pitch. Oh my God, Troy. Firstpitchpodcast.com. Jeez, man.
Happy Friday.
All right. Happy Friday, dude. Jeez, seriously. Okay. Loaded show today. We're going to get to Dave Roberts and his possible extension. We're going to get to Christian Walker and there not being MRI machines in Florida. We're going to get to Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s potential ask. Lawrence Butler signed a deal. We got to preview the Cubs at the very end of the show. But first, Shohei Ohtani's pitching rehab has officially been slow played, right? Dave Roberts talked about this yesterday. The decision is reportedly synced up between Ohtani and the medical staff, but he's not stopped throwing, but he hasn't done a bullpen session since the 25th. He's not going to face hitters before they leave next Wednesday for their season opening series in Japan. So he's probably going to end up coming back a little bit later in the season as a pitcher than we expected. It's been 9 days since he threw off a mound. Is this any reason to be concerned? Like, is this something where we need to change our expectations for Ohtani coming back from a second Tommy John and a shoulder surgery on his non-throwing shoulder, which I think is fine because he homered in his first at-bat in spring? Or is this just something where, like, maybe this is the beginning of the conversation about do we just shift Shohei Ohtani to center field or some defensive position, right field or something like that?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the beginning of that conversation. It's been something that's needed to be talked about for a long time. I mean, it's cool. It's cool if you can hit and pitch. That's cool. I mean, it was cool 100 years ago when Babe Ruth did it. It was cool 5 years ago when Shohei Ohtani did it. But and he did it very well when he was doing both at the same time. But we saw last year what he is capable of when he is focusing on just one thing, and that one thing being hitting. He hit, and I said the other day, he hit 56 home runs. I was wrong. He only hit 54, so he's a scrub. But, you know, he still had a fantastic season. He was National League MVP. It was his third MVP since he's been in the league since, I think, 2018 was his first season. And So it's if he does come back this year to pitch, it now seems like it's going to be a lot closer to the trade deadline, which will be pretty helpful for the Dodgers.
Can I just – did you call Shohei Ohtani a scrub?
Jokingly. Sarcasm.
Right. Okay. Because it's weird. All I heard
– I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
I didn't know you didn't like Shohei Ohtani. That's wild. No, yeah. I think the difference in I'm going to push back a little bit on this. I think the difference in Shohei and even Babe Ruth is, like, Babe Ruth wasn't amazing at them at the same time.
You're right.
Shohei Ohtani has a career 3.01 ERA. And in 2022, he was the runner-up for MVP in the American League, while on the mound, a 2.33 ERA and 219 strikeouts in 166 innings. He led the American League in strikeout rate at 11.9. And at the same time, on offense, he hit 34 homers with an 875 OPS. Now, I will say he was much better as a hitter in both 23 and 24, right? And so there is the conversation of, let's say he were to do both this year, would you rather have 24's 310 Shohei with a 1. OPS and 54 homers? Or would you rather have a 273 average and 34 homers and an ERA? Let's assume it's a bump in the road on the rehab and it's mid threes. It's like, which one's more valuable? I still feel like if you can let him pitch, because that's super valuable. He doesn't take a an additional pitcher roster spot. So you can have a standard five-man rotation and have Shohei. He can give you a six-man rotation because there's a flexibility with that roster spot. But I do think there is some merit to, do we start letting him work a little bit in the outfield, right? You have plenty of corner outfielders. Center field would be where you would need him. That's a lot of running on the legs. I don't think he can pitch and do that. But I do think, given his age, he's just now 30, given his physical fitness and everything, there is a possibility to, if you wanted to in the next couple seasons, maybe if this pitching thing doesn't, if the rehab doesn't work right, like he's not the same caliber of pitcher that he was before the injury, which it's a second Tommy John. We think, we don't even know exactly what procedure he had. I think it's an internal brace, but like I don't think we have any confirmation on that. I think there's at least a conversation to be had about, is there more value out of Shohei if he could get to, I don't know if he'd ever get to Gold Glove caliber defense in center field. He has the athleticism to do it. The arm obviously would be an asset. It'll be interesting to see, but I definitely think you have to leave him on the mound as long as you can, because there's so much additional value you can get out of him doing both. And that's just not a situation we've ever seen from a two-way player at the same time, right? Babe Ruth did them both, but separately. Rick Ankiel was not a bad pitcher. He was a pretty decent defensive center fielder, but never at the same time.
No. You're right for sure. Mine was more of an extreme.
More of a being a hater. I get it. Yeah,
right.
I get
it. Yeah, exactly. But I see it as more of like a short-term benefit or a long-term benefit thing with the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani. Of course, this year, with the way that the Dodgers starting rotation is constructed and how injury-prone their rotation is constructed, of course, they're going to need all hands on deck as far as pitching. And Shohei Ohtani is one of those hands that can do that. But in the long run, I think that it's more beneficial for both the Dodgers and Ohtani to kind of shift him towards being just a hitter in the long run, because again, like we saw last year,
give them the ability to use the DH spot, put him in a corner outfield spot or something, like put him somewhere. Maybe he's the eventual replacement for Freddie at first. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And in the long run, I think that's more beneficial for both parties.
Yeah. I think that's probably the better way to continue his, like, I don't know how long he can do both as he gets into his 30s. Like, that's where injury concerns come up more often for a lot of people. So, okay. All right, moving on from him to a young outfielder out in the American League. Lawrence Butler has agreed to a 7-year contract with the Oakland A's, $65.5 million. Also has a club option for 2032. He's 24 years old. He really broke out late in the year last year. Final 73 games of the season, 302 with a 943 OPS, 20 home runs, 18 doubles, 2 triples, almost 50 RBI for the Athletics, and 14 stolen bases. He was only the third player age 24 or younger with multiple 3-homer games in a season. Hall of Famer Ralph Kiner and Mookie Betts of the Dodgers. That's it. And the list of accolades that he did in that back half there. Second ace player with 2 3-homer games in the season. Third player with 2 3-homer games from the leadoff spot in the season. Kyle Schwarber did it last year. Mookie Betts did it in 18. Like, a lot of stuff there. So he wasn't going to hit free agency until 2029. They went ahead and committed to him through the expected opening of the new ballpark in Las Vegas. That's supposed to be 2028's opening day. They now have him. They now have Brent Rooker, who signed for 5 years and $60 million. Mark Kotze signed an extension, the manager, which will keep him, if they pick up the club option, through 2029. Good move, or is this too early to commit long-term to a player that could still stumble?
Oh, I think it's a good move. I think this is a very good move. I think that he finally was able to figure it out and put it all together there at that last half of the season. And I've said it multiple times. It started in that series in Philadelphia when both he and Brent Rooker just went off in that series and just took that down the stretch the rest of the way. And I think this is a very good move for the Athletics. And I think it's smart for the ownership to kind of lock him up until after the new stadium in Las Vegas, because now they're going to have, you know, a star. He's not a superstar yet, but he can get there eventually, maybe. But he can certainly be the face of that franchise moving forward, and especially in their new ballpark in Las Vegas. I think it's a great move. I love the extension of Lawrence Butler. He's fun to watch, and I do think that he finally put it all together, and we're going to see a great full season from him this year.
Yeah, it's I do like the idea of, hey, he could get even better. Like, let's go ahead and lock him up while we can. And it feels like a lot of the stuff that he does, the defense and the corner outfield spot, I think he can play center too, but they have J.J. Bleday there. The speed, a lot of that stuff's not going to slump, even if he backs up a little bit offensively. But no, I love this. I also have him in one of my two dynasty leagues, so I love that for me too. He gets to play at a minor league park for a couple of years. I've got him for a couple of years. This is great. I'm a fan. I'm absolutely a fan of this move. I think it's fantastic. From a guy who signed an extension to a guy who did not sign an extension, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., apparently, according to ESPN, they had a Spanish language interview with him. He says that he didn't reach $600 million on a deal that was expected to be, he said he was looking for 14 years. So we're believing 14 or 15 years, less than $600 million compared to Juan Soto, who got 15 and 765. Should the Blue Jays have paid Vlad Guerrero if the offer was, in fact, less than $600 million over 15 years?
Yeah, because if you look, if you break it down into the AAV, assuming no deferrals or anything like that, then, you know, 600 over 15 years is $40 million a year, and he reportedly asked for less than that. So if you're looking, while that may be kind of expensive for a first baseman, he is one of the best offensively at first base. And so it's, I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is well worth that, whatever the final total would be, especially less than $40 million a year, because he wouldn't be making as much as Judge. He wouldn't be making as much as Juan Soto. He wouldn't be making as much as some of the starting pitchers that are making more than that. So I think the Blue Jays should have pulled the trigger on that, especially if they wanted to lock him up in the long term. But now he's going to enter free agency and find somewhere else to play next year.
Yeah. I think this is something where your concern would have to be that he would age poorly in the back half of it. I don't really think he's had a lot of like injury issues in his career. He's coming off his second best season. He's a career 288 hitter, but he hit 323 last year. Like by comparison, Soto hit 288 last year in his walk year with the Yankees, although Soto had a 419 on base and 41 homers. So Guerrero said in December that they had made an offer that was like $340 million. I obviously had to be less time. And that was prior to the Soto contract. That's kind of like Rafi Devers got like 313 with the Red Sox. I wonder, did Soto change things for a lot of players, or is that going to be kind of viewed as an outlier? Like, if you look at the comparison here, I think for the NFL is you saw two fully guaranteed quarterback deals in Deshaun Watson with the Browns and Kirk Cousins with the Vikings. And so many teams just refused to factor those deals into their contract negotiations. And they kind of called those outliers. Cousins was for 3 years, so it wasn't super huge. But Watson's was super long-term, and it was not only fully guaranteed, I think, but it was also like protected by, if he got suspended, he wouldn't have to give back any money, which was just wild. And it's been a terrible deal for them. Part of me wonders, does MLB teams just say like, hey, we're not even going to consider what Soto got when we're negotiating with you. Your comps are going to be guys like Rafi, guys like Fernando Tatis, who got his super long extension, but he was much younger. He was like 22. We're going to put you into these buckets versus putting you in a bucket with Soto because he's a generational player. And I don't know how that's going to be treated.
Yeah, no, I can certainly see that for sure. There's not many players in Major League Baseball that are on the level of Juan Soto and offensively and can get can really deserve a contract of the one that the Mets gave to Soto. So I see him getting anywhere near Soto. I think that 600 is probably the ceiling for whatever deal that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does get, wherever he gets that deal. But I think it will be a lot closer to like in the 400 to 500 range than 600.
Yeah, it's just, this feels like it has the potential to drag out a little longer than maybe, like, I don't think it's going to be Soto was, right? Because I do feel like this is the first situation we're going to see where who blinks first, the player or the teams. And he's obviously going to compare himself to Soto, and teams are going to try to not let the Soto deal be a precedent-setting deal. So we'll see what happens. Sticking with first base, look at these segues here. Sticking with first base, Christian Walker of the Houston Astros has been sent back to Houston for medical testing, which is weird because I'm pretty sure Florida has MRI machines. He missed a month with an oblique strain last year with the Diamondbacks. And he said he felt some tightness in his left oblique while in the batting cages on Wednesday. He was scratched from the lineup as a precaution. He was very confident on Thursday that he was going to be fine. And then they sent him to Houston to go get checked out. The quote here when he first got injured on Wednesday from Walker, quote, "I took a couple swings during batting practice and didn't like how it felt. A little familiar with oblique stuff, so once I felt that, I tried to not push it, given the time of the year and the time frame. Over the course of a couple hours, I started to feel a little uncomfortable." So establishes that there was an injury on Wednesday. On Thursday, he says, "It doesn't feel as serious, but it's hard. Where it is, I feel like 24 to 48 hours afterwards," which he was at 24 hours when he said that. "It's going to get worse swelling-wise before it starts to feel better. You've got to let your body go through the process, but so far today, it feels pretty good." And then prior to the game against the Mets on Thursday, manager Joe Espada said, "Walker's going to return to Houston on Thursday night, get an MRI on Friday morning, and then return to West Palm Beach." What are we doing? Can you just not send results of an MRI to the team doctors in Houston? Why does he have to fly halfway across the country for an MRI? They have MRI machines in Florida. What are we doing here?
Yeah,
why do you have to have like, does he have to be wearing a special Astro shirt during the MRI that they only have in the clubhouse? Like, what are we doing? This doesn't make any sense. What the hell?
Yeah, plus, you know, with all the airplanes falling out of skies lately, the last thing you want to do is send your already injured first baseman.
We're going to have a We Are Marshall situation here. What are we doing, man?
Wow, this show took a dark turn today, but no.
It really did. What are we doing? Like, why? Why does he have to fly back to Houston for an MRI?
It doesn't make any sense. It's a lot of expenses that just shouldn't have been made. I mean, I guess they didn't have enough to write off on their taxes this year or something, but it's I don't get it either. And it's certainly something that it's the Astros really haven't made a lot of sense lately. And I know I've said that a lot lately, but they just, the things that they've done just don't make a lot of sense. I know that they, you know, the Jose Abreu signing, that didn't work out. Nobody expected that to not work out at the time that they signed him, but it did not work out. And they've just had an issue with first base ever since that. And, you know, everybody thought that the issue, including us, thought the issue was solved with Christian Walker, and it may not be because, you know, he's 33 years old. And even though he's won the three gold gloves in as many years in the National League. He has dealt with injuries. He dealt with injuries last year, as you said, and he's already dealing with injuries this year. And so it still seems like the Astros haven't got their first base situation figured out, and they certainly don't have their logistics figured out with sending him to Houston for an MRI.
There are three different MRI facilities within a block and a half of the ballpark. I swear to God, I am on Google Maps right now. There is one, two, three imaging centers a block and a half away from the... He could walk to get an MRI, and we're flying him to Houston, Texas. What are we doing here? There's a hospital two blocks away. There's a whole-ass hospital. It's an actual hospital. It's not like a senior. It's an actual hospital. HCA Florida JFK North Hospital is a block and a half away.
I saw you typing, and I did not know what you were looking up, but that is freaking hilarious.
It's 2.8 miles to a hospital from the ballpark gates. He can cycle over in 12 minutes. He can walk in 48. It's a 10-minute drive right now with traffic.
You and I could get there faster from where we live than he can get to the one in Houston.
Yeah. What are we doing? All right. That's all I had. It was weird. A weird story. I don't know why we're doing that. I just was like, come on. Like, I would understand. So Ronald Acuña Jr. had a thing like this last year. He tweaked his knee in spring, and they flew him out to L.A. because he was going to see the same surgeon who did his ACL repair in 21. Like, I get that. He got local imaging, and then he got a second opinion from the exact same surgeon who happened to live in L.A. Mm-hmm. Okay. Christian Walker's oblique, he didn't have surgery on it last year. It wasn't treated by anybody in Houston. It was treated by a dude in Arizona. What are we doing? Anyway, all right, I'm done. I'm done with that. I was getting mad, whatever. The Dodgers and Dave Roberts are making progress in extension talks, and they say that he's going to likely establish a new record for average annual value in his extension. He's in the final season of his three-year deal. The record right now is $8 million in salary that Craig Counsell got on the five-year deal with the Cubs last winter. Dave Roberts is the longest tenured manager in the National League right now. And like the second longest in all of baseball, right? Kevin Cash of the Rays has like 11 years. Is Dave Roberts deserving to be the highest paid manager in baseball?
That's a tough one. I think that this is kind of more of a, I mean, we see this in the NFL all the time with quarterbacks. This is a high-profile manager, and another high-profile manager got a record-breaking deal last year. So now the next high-profile manager is going to break that record, and it's just kind of – and then next year there'll probably be another high-profile manager who breaks this record that Dave Roberts gets. And so it's kind of along those lines to me, and we see this also, you know, in college football with head coaches. It seems to be the going trend with managers and coaches in sports across all sports. And Dave Roberts – he's led the Dodgers to two World Series in the past 5 years, air quotes around the first one, but
2020 Mickey Mouse title. Yeah.
Yep. And, and like you said, he's the longest tenured manager in the National League. It's not surprising that they're doing it. Whether or not he's deserving, that's kind of up for debate just because of the teams that he's had on the field. I mean, it's hard to be a bad manager when you have the rosters that the Dodgers have.
Yeah, he's managed 1,358 games, and no other manager with that many games has beat that winning percentage, 62.7%. But at the same time, like, they won the NL West every year of the last three under Don Mattingly before he got hired, and they've won every year but one under Roberts. It was the 2021 Giants where they won 107 games. Everything went right. And I mean, I think it's I, I think you're right here that it's just it's the timing and he's the next one to get it. There's really nothing other than like some of his early managing career in-game decisions were a little iffy, but like there's no reason not to make him the highest paid. They clearly have the money. So it's hard not to give him all of that money when there's almost nothing you can point to that specifically says here's his problem, right? Like even though he, yes, you and I could probably manage the Dodgers to the National League West title, but they did win a World Series. They did make two World Series and win a second one under caveats. So yeah, make him the highest paid. Here, go ahead. I don't think it matters really. Other than like some bullpen usage decisions, I don't really think the manager does that much in baseball. Like as far as things that actually can impact the game other than bullpen usage when you go grab a pitcher and then overall holistic things we can't measure like clubhouse vibes and whatnot. But speaking of counsel, let's get to his squad, the Chicago Cubs. The segues write themselves in this show, guys. We have them projected to win the NL Central in our projections. They are officially, according to FanGraphs, they are second place, 83-79, tied with the Cardinals, actually. Wild. Even though they have the best odds, 40.1% to win the division and a 53% chance of making the playoffs. So looking at this, obviously the big move here, they bring in Kyle Tucker for right field. You know, Seiya Suzuki's now the DH. They've got Pete Crow Armstrong in center, Ian Happ in left after Cody Bellinger was shipped to New York. They also moved Isak Paredes in the Kyle Tucker deal. So they have prospect Matt Shaw projected to be a guy at third base. Nico Horner, if he's fully healthy from his surgery, at second. And if not, you have John Birdie and Vidal Brujan as utility men on the bench. They brought in Justin Turner as a DH backup first baseman kind of guy behind Michael Bush. Lineup-wise, we feel pretty good about this is probably the best lineup in the division, even though maybe only Kyle Tucker is a top five guy at his position, right?
Yeah, I'm really high on this lineup. I mean, we've talked about it multiple times. I think I brought it up yesterday that we said leading up to the Kyle Tucker trade that the Cubs had a bunch of guys that were kind of average to above average at what they did, but they didn't have that one guy who was over the top superstar. And now they have that guy in Kyle Tucker that can be the spearhead of their lineup. And it just lengthens the lineup tremendously. I mean, now you don't have Dansby Swanson batting in the top four spots in the lineup, and not that he's a scrub or anything, but you know, you certainly don't want him batting near the top of the lineup. And guys like Pete Crow Armstrong can have his speed do damage at the back end of the lineup, and then potentially Matt Shaw starting projected to start at the back end of the lineup. He'll probably move up pretty quick, but mm-hmm. it's a solid lineup from top to bottom. And you know, we moved from the Dodgers, who another segue here, the Dodgers who are a team that are not afraid to spend money, to the Cubs who refuse to spend money.
I swear this is the. It was neck and neck between the Cubs and the Red Sox for me on franchises that should be just massive swinging, you know, capabilities in spring in free agency and just don't. And at least the Cubs went out and paid Bregman a bunch of money. There's a bunch of deferrals and stuff in there to kind of manipulate it, but still, they at least made that deal. We've already kind of seen that, like, nobody's expecting the Cubs to re-sign Kyle Tucker, which is just wild to me that, like, they acquired him. I think they almost immediately took him to like an arbitration hearing. They couldn't agree on the arbitration number. And then it's like, come on, guys. Like, you're acting like you're broke boys, and you should not be broke boys. You are one of the most storied franchises in baseball. Your owners are billionaires in the Ricketts family. Like, what are we doing? Why are you? You've even started to build some of the ballpark stuff, the Wrigleyville stuff, just like the Battery to make extra money. Like, what are we doing? Not just acting like just giant swinging dicks in free agency. Like, what are we doing here? Why are we not just plopping it on the table and be like, yeah, we're the Cubs. We're signing whoever we want. Blows my mind. Like, Kyle Tucker's going to walk after this year. And I know they have exciting outfielders who they can replace him with. But, like, no one expects them to re-sign Kyle Tucker. It's a one-year acquisition only. Like, at least with the Yankees and Soto, we all thought the Yankees had a shot. I have zero expectations that they make an offer to Kyle Tucker that's not the fourth or fifth best offer he gets. And it's just, it's embarrassing. Sorry. Rotation. I somewhat like the rotation. Shota Imanaga, Justin Steele, Jameson Taillon, Matthew Boyd's an interesting grab as a number four. Colin Rea from the Brewers as the five is a little bit, you know, Javier Assad at the strained oblique, so you got to bump somebody in the rotation. Some of their depth, Cade Horton's one of the top prospects, had a lost year last year. They've got a lot of interesting young dudes, Ben Brown, Jordan Wicks, Caleb Killian, even Cody Poteet, who they got from the Yankees in the Bellinger deal. I like the rotation depth. I like the top of the rotation, right? Your Imanaga, your Steele, your Taillon. Best rotation in the division, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'm right there with you. I love the top of this rotation, those first three. And then Matthew Boyd is kind of up in the air. He's going to eat some innings. He's not going to qualify for the ERA title after missing a lot of time last year. But he's going to eat some innings, and he'll be serviceable. I don't think he's going to be like a Taijuan Walker or anything. And then, you know, Colin Rea until Javier Assad comes back should be okay. He came from that Milwaukee pitching factory. So he shouldn't be too bad, but I'm very high on Shota Imanaga. He had a fantastic 2024, his first season in Major League Baseball. He is the outlier for Japanese pitchers to come to America.
He's the dude that you can't go off of just like, what's this guy's fastball velocity? Oh, he's a bomb. Like Shota Imanaga, it's incredibly deceptive. It's a lot of backspin. It's a low vertical approach angle. It fools a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's awesome. I love that. I just love Shota Imanaga, period. Like, listening to his interviews, to him talk to people, the whole thing of, like, going to get coffee and just using, like, using the name Mike when he's getting coffee. He's like, Mike. And then they give it to him with Mike. It's just wild. I really do think that Shota's somehow still underrated.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great fit. I didn't really see a lot of issues with Shota last year. I thought the splitter would be better. He threw it second in most used pitch. It didn't have the results that I necessarily expected it to. And I think some of that was adjusting to the American ball. Still only allowed, he gave up four homers on it. The fastball is what he gave up most of the homers on. The fastball got rocked at times. It's like a 230 average, like a 471 slug. But if he can work the fastball up in the zone a little bit better than he does, he still throws it in the zone too much, I think. And then the seven, eight pitches he has off of that, right? Now, he really only uses three. The four-seamers, 50% usage. The splitters, like 30%. And then the sweepers, like 8%. The rest of them, the changeup, he threw like 100 of them. It's like 4%. Curveball, sinker, cutter. He's barely used a bunch of those other ones, but he has eight pitches. And I just love those kitchen sink guys who can throw anything at you in any situation. I think if he can incorporate some of those a little better, I think this dude can be a top 20 starter in baseball, maybe. But I do think the top of this rotation is good enough to win a postseason series. They just got to get there. Mm-hmm. Not a thing they've done in recent seasons.
Yeah, not at all. And I'm right. Like I said, I'm right there with you on Shota Imanaga. I'm very high on him. And, you know, Justin Steele, he dealt with a little bit of injuries last year, but he still
first threw time, I think he's really been hurt in his career, I think.
Yeah. But he still threw 134 innings. So you can still kind of pencil him in to qualify for the ERA title. And just qualifying for the ERA title, Shota Imanaga threw 173 innings in 2024.
In his first season, it's like the only time we've seen a Japanese pitcher come over and not like have issues his first year with workload.
Yeah.
They handled it correctly. Correctly.
Yeah, so you can expect him to get a lot closer, assuming he stays healthy. You can expect him to get a lot closer to 200 innings this year if he stays healthy and if they want him to get to that point. And then Jameson Taillon qualified for the ERA title. So all three of your top three guys in the rotation are guys that can carry the load of like the top three in a rotation should you expect them to do. So it's a solid rotation, best in the division, and it's gonna work wonders for them.
Yeah, bullpen too. They brought in Ryan Pressly via trade from Houston to be the closer. Porter Hodge was the closer last year. They now have him in a setup role, young guy. Super high arm angle. He throws like not straight vertical, but like pretty close to it. Really, really unique. They acquired Ryan Brazier from the Dodgers when they signed Yates and Scott and had to get rid of somebody. They got rid of him. They grabbed him for cheap. Tyson Miller, Nate Pearson in the bullpen. They signed Caleb Thielbar as a lefty. I do think they need a second lefty in the pen. They only have one lefty projected on Fangraphs as of now in the bullpen. I think they need a second lefty reliever. Luke Little's on the roster. Brandon Hughes and Riley Martin are in camp in our eyes. But like, I do think a second lefty would be great. Outside of that, I have zero real concerns about this bullpen. And I think it's probably, given that we don't know who from the Brewers is going to step up and just be amazing, I think right now on paper, this is the best bullpen in the division right now, with the caveat of Milwaukee's going to create some dude out of like dust to pitch to a 150 ERA with 12 strikeouts per nine innings down the stretch.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I like this bullpen too, especially the back end of it. Ryan Brazier, Porter Hodge, and Ryan Pressly, for the seventh, eighth, and ninth. That's a deadly combination. And I do agree. I think they should add another lefty. I mean, David Robertson is still a free agent, even though we have already talked about.
He's a righty, but okay.
You're right.
David Robertson did check. Is a righty. I did. Yeah, I had the same thought. He'd be a great addition to this bullpen. I did check. He's a righty. Yeah, got me too.
He was a lefty. But okay, well then, never mind. David Robertson, you can stay a free agent the rest of your life. But yeah, the back end of the bullpen.
Apparently, is solid. He's going to. Nobody wants to sign the man.
But it's a good unit, best in the division. I mean, all three units are best in the division. I mean, they're clearly. I don't know what Fangraphs is smoking, but the Cubs are clearly the best team in the National League Central, and they will be the only playoff representative from the National League Central.
I'm going to give you a projected record. I want you to tell me over or under. I'm going to say this is not my prediction. This is just the thing I'm giving for you. I'm going to say 90 and 72 over or under.
I'm going to say over. I think they win 92 games.
See, I'm going to say under. I think something's going to go wrong, but I still think they win the division. I just think it's going to be like an 89, 88 win season. So we're a little bit different on the projection here, but I still think that they have a lot of quality pieces. They've even got both veteran and young prospect depth, right? Like I feel like they're a bunch of their prospects. They have Nicky Lopez, who's an amazing defender as an NRI in camp and top prospect, James Triantos. You look in the outfield, they have Travis Janikowski available plus a couple 40-man outfielders. Like, they've got options at a lot of different positions if something happens. Reese McGuire at catcher. They've got dudes. They've got depth. And it's just, if something goes wrong, if Nico Horner's rehab takes longer than expected, if Matt Shaw doesn't hit at third base, like, something's going to go wrong. I think they have the depth to weather it, but I'm still going to say just under 90 wins, but they still win the division. So,
yeah, for sure. Honestly, I have them in the 92 to 94 range, so I kind of went more conservative with the 92. But yeah, they do need a lot of things to go right, and they need Matt Shaw to work out at third base. But yeah, with that depth, I'm really high on this Cubs team this year, it's probably going to be a lot different in 2026. They're probably going to be back to not winning the division in 2026 since they refuse to spend money. But in 2025, they seem to be going all in, and so for 2025, I'm all in on the Cubs in the Central.
There you go. This has been First Pitch for Friday, March 7th. Extra long edition of First Pitch. Listen on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review if you're on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell and tell your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com to get all of our content every single day. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.